Hello and welcome to the first episode of Creating a Positive Impact. So one of my aims with this show is to give you guys more ways in which you can play your part. And I plan to do that by going on the same journey myself. I am learning just as much as you guys are. Now, that might take form in finding new brands that we connect with to make more conscious purchasing decisions, or maybe connecting with people who are fighting for causes that we resonate with. Over time, as we speak with more people, the interconnectivity of the world's various issues will start to become more obvious, and new ways in which we can all do our bit across more aspects of our lives will become clearer. Now, I'm hard-pressed to find a better place to start than with today's guest. I'm speaking with Si Martin from Heads Above the Waves. Heads Above the Waves are a not-for-profit mental health organization that raises awareness for depression and self-harm in young people. His work in introducing positive, healthy coping mechanisms for young people is really heartwarming to see, and someone I'm very happy to be sitting down with. This show is about people that don't hope for a better world. They act to make it so. Si, hello, how are you doing?
Hey Sam, I'm good man, I'm real good.
Good stuff. What have you been up to? Been busy?
I've had COVID in a very 2020 move. It's been a very weird throwback of a week. So yeah, I've been horizontal for most of this past week, but then I've kind of slowly been chipping away on little bits and pieces as well. Some very exciting stuff actually, which yeah.
Well, we will tuck into all of the nitty gritty, but let's start at the beginning. Let's just start for those of us that don't know who you are or who Heads Above the Waves is. Let's go back to start. Just give us some context and some background about you, about Heads Above the Waves.
Sick, yeah. My name is Si. Hello. Hi. It's like the noise that people make when I walk in the room. That's how you'll remember my name. I've delivered that self-deprecating line so many times.
I can imagine. Yeah,
it's the noise people make when they hear me saying that line is how you remember it. Yeah.
Rolled off the tongue too easily.
Yeah. So my name's Si. And yeah, I'm founder of an organization, a mental health nonprofit called Heads Above the Waves. And we support young people who struggle with their mental health to find healthy coping mechanisms. What's interesting, what's funny is that we started 10 years ago as a very much self-harm specific organization supporting young people who self-harm. But then what was interesting was the stuff that we were putting out there, people ended up finding that helpful for all sorts of different struggles, issues, situations they found themselves in. So I've kind of broadened the definition over the last few years to actually just call ourselves a mental health organization in general. But yeah, we're here to try and introduce healthy coping mechanisms and help people find ways to get through whatever life throws at you.
Awesome, man. That's mega. It's always nice to hear that there's people out there doing things like this that really matter. But I'm curious, so was there a personal connection to this for you? I mean, assuming most people that kind of are advocates for anything in the mental health space generally have their own experience, normally negative experience with it. And that's the driving force to take action on this sort of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it very much follows that pattern, I suppose, of I went through a rubbish time as a teenager, and the mission and the purpose is to try and make it so that nobody else feels as rubbish as I've felt in the past, basically. But I massively struggled. And I struggled with self-harm for a lot of my teenage years, undiagnosed depression and anxiety. And originally, because for me, it was playing the drums was the thing that got me through this, right? That became my replacement coping mechanism. So now I can look back on it with hindsight and say, yes, it was self-harm was a coping mechanism as I was trying to process and deal with these emotions. Because I got bullied a lot. I didn't really have a lot of friends in high school. I know what you're thinking, Si, but you're so cool. You're so wonderful and talented. Why? But yeah, I had a really rough time through high school. And so I always wanted there to be something on my level that spoke to me and that I understood and felt like it got me. A lot of the help, well, ironically, my sister gave me the number for Samaritans when I don't even know how old I was, sometime in my teenage years. And I specifically remember her saying, I think you should really call these people and speak to them because you're clearly struggling. You're really not doing well. Mm. And I was like, my problems aren't important enough for them. They don't care about my stupid problems. And I've now grown up and I'm like, that is so false. But at the time, yeah, I was like, I'm not important enough and the stuff I'm going through isn't a big enough deal. What's interesting was is that someone I spoke to when I went to sixth form, they were like, if it's a big enough deal for you to reach this point of hurting yourself, then it's obviously a big enough deal that it's worth doing something about and trying to get some help and support for. So in the very, very early days of Heads Above the Waves, the original kind of plan was to raise money before it was even Heads Above the Waves, I suppose. The original plan was that I was going to create band t-shirts for my band that said Pop Punk Saved My Life. Because like I said, it was drums. It was discovering bands like Blink 182 and Taking Back Sunday and The Wonder Years. Discovering these bands really, I felt a deep connection to that music and like the lyrics. And it was a real kind of escapism and stuff for me. So I was going to make these band shirts. Pop Punk Saved My Life. We were going to give the proceeds to the Samaritans because I wanted to try and change people's minds who'd felt the way that I'd felt my problems weren't important enough. And then I went for some funding through a charity called Unlimited and to try and print these shirts. And they said, well, we won't fund you to support an existing charity. We'd fund you to start your own social enterprise. So I was like, right. Okay. So did that. And then, like I mentioned, for me, playing drums was a big help. And I was like, all right, we'll start a thing that just teaches everybody to play the drums. And then we're going to fix self-harm. And then it became very apparent that wasn't the answer. And started speaking to more and more people who'd had different experiences as well. And actually finding everyone had their own kind of version of my story, right? So it was everyone had their coping strategy, their thing that got them through the rough days. Heads then kind of evolved into actually sharing these stories and these ideas and these coping strategies, yeah, is the word for it, for everyone. If you weren't in exactly the same situation as me, playing drums might not help you. But what helped this person over here might help you instead. So actually just creating those storytelling moments and the idea that one size doesn't fit all has become a real kind of mission statement for what Heads is all about, really.
Yeah, amazing. And so what does that look like now, day to day? What's the practicalities of that? Is it, I think you're doing some workshops like in schools and stuff. I suppose the short answer is that, what do you do? How do you actually tackle this?
I ask myself that every day. What do I do? What is that? No, the funny thing is that in keeping with how we started, really, is of like, someone saying we'd support you to start your own social enterprise. And I was just going, okay, we've just said yes to things for years. We've just keep saying yes. So we were running a Tumblr website with just sharing those stories, sharing the coping strategies and stuff on Tumblr for a long time. And then we've been doing it for maybe 2 years and just going to gigs, selling some t-shirts that would fund printing some flyers, printing some more t-shirts, keeping the website hosted and up and live. And we would go around to just gigs with this little suitcase, just being like, do you want to buy some t-shirts? And we had this 10-year plan that we were going to be the UK version of Warped Tour. Do you remember Warped Tour?
Wow, yeah.
Originally, the plan was that, yeah, we were going to become this kind of really cool, accessible festival that people were going to come to. And that was going to be how we would facilitate conversations and introducing healthy coping mechanisms like skating and music and stuff like this. But after Heads had been a thing for 2 years, a group came to us who they were a drug and alcohol service for young people in like kind of Caerphilly kind of area. And they said, we've got a lot of young people who are struggling with self-harm and we obviously can talk to them about drugs and alcohol, but we want someone else to come and talk about self-harm. Do you do school workshops? And so we kind of went, yes. And we worked with those guys. And I'm so grateful to this day, actually, that we got to work with this team of people who really believed in us and really wanted to help us grow and develop these workshops, that now that's become probably the biggest and most practical, hands-on, helpful way that we actually support people. But all of that just became because we said yes to something. And then we went and spoke at a conference and delivered like kind of the results of this trial set of workshops that we'd done. And from the back of that, we then had a bunch more schools messaging asking if we could come do workshops with them. So we started doing more and more of that. That then developed into us creating a training session for staff in schools who support young people who self-harm. So again, I think it's one of the really useful things that we do is that we actually try and teach, well, even better than that, we went and spoke to the young people themselves and we said, what do you want your teachers to know when they're supporting you? And that's the basis of this training, right? It's not us sitting around being like, what do we think teachers should know? It's sure taking our experiences and feeding that in, but it's actually using the voices of young people. And I suppose us being that kind of almost translation service, I guess, from like what young people are feeling and want, but maybe don't feel able to tell their teachers, whereas we can come in and be that kind of intermediary and actually say, listen up, this is what you should be doing.
Yeah.
And then that's now developed into a parent session as well. So we've got, it's largely the same content, but just adapted more for if you're a parent of a child who self-harms and you want to try and support them, here's a session for you that might help you understand and support them a little bit better. So a big chunk of our time is spent working on stuff around schools. The little suitcase that I mentioned that we were rocking up to gigs at with our merch in, that's now grown into a full-blown shop over in Canton in Cardiff, where we've got a full range of merch that, if I say so myself, is actually cool stuff, like stuff that you'd want to wear anyway, rather than it just being like, this is a charity t-shirt.
Yeah.
It's actually just cool, nice streetwear. But people come in and they go, oh, this is cool. I like the look of that. And then we tell them what it's actually about. And it's, oh, and it's, I think it's rather than relying on donations and rather than relying on government funding or grant funding, it's just been, it's honestly, it's probably been easier to try and build a successful clothing brand than it has been to try and successfully gain a bunch of grant funding over the years.
Wow.
I say that like we're a successful clothing brand. We're still not. It's still a work in progress. But yeah, so that takes up a big lot of our time. And then also just content creation as well has become another thing where when we first started out, again, this was a decade ago, Instagram was still in its relative infancy, I suppose. And the thing that I've always thought is that we need to be where people are. So whether that is back in the day we were on Tumblr or whether that is now it's more like TikTok or even just the case of us like going to gigs and going to events, popping up at festivals, meeting people where they are so that accessing help and support and information and even just a reminder that you're not alone, which can be so powerful in itself, that there's just as few barriers to that as possible. Yeah, if people are on TikTok, we need to be on TikTok. And so I'm spending an awful lot of my time these days just talking to my phone in my garage being like, hey.
there's definitely a few things to pick up on that you said that are really interesting. I think one, more just a comment and something I've noticed more than a question, but I think the grassroots level of you guys saying yes to stuff, there's actually something in that I think a lot of people can learn from. Saying yes to new things and throwing yourself in the deep end and, I suppose, excuse the heads above the waves palm there. That in itself could be a huge kind of, you know, a way of broadening your mind and getting in front of new experiences. That's something that actually really helped me. So I guess there's something directly in your, you know, in your behavior that's intrinsically linked to the kind of the benefits that you guys bring anyway. That's just an aside that I've noticed. But then I suppose also the phone thing, the social media thing, that interests me. Because do you find there's a direct rub, there's some friction in between what you know, what you're all about, what you're trying to do, that mission, and where social media fits into it? Because I'm guessing, especially with, you know, when you're talking to kids and at school age, some of the social media stuff is directly the reason they might be needing you in the first place, right? There's definitely some negative impacts that social media can have. So how do you balance that, or do you disagree with that? Do you think it's just something that's just, it's a tool and it can be used for good, and just sort of learning how to use it properly, you might not need to fall into some of these kind of problems that we see today?
I feel like we could probably record a 6-hour podcast just on that in itself. Because, yeah, I agree to an extent. I do think that there's definitely a lot of harm that can come from social media, even if that's down to people feeling more anonymous. An example I'm thinking of is literally we posted a video quite intentionally trying to hack these things. And again, man, my personal TikTok algorithm is all skewed towards like how to hack people's attention and stuff like this. So because it is, it's a challenge to try and stand out, particularly if you're trying to spread a positive message in amongst a world where controversy and division gets more engagement and therefore gets seen more and pushed more, that's a real challenge. And it's like, how do we try and use that? So for example, we've got a long sleeve t-shirt that says, "I'm glad you exist" on the inside of the sleeves. So if you're about to give someone a hug, they read that message. And a lot of people have said, "Oh, that's such a cheesy idea." And it's like, yeah, that's the point, bro. But so we've intentionally just done a video where it's, "Do you think this is the cutest or the cheesiest thing you've ever heard of?" and thrown it up there. And the first comment on it within 20 minutes was someone being like, "This is lame." And I was like, would you say that to my face? Would you walk in and say that to me? Not to be like, "Sir, to my face, bro." But I feel like people have this sense that they say stuff online that they wouldn't otherwise say in person. And I don't mind. Like I say, I intentionally made that video to try and get a reaction from someone so that I can reply. I replied to that guy going, "Hell yeah, brother," with a rock emoji. Because it's like, yeah, great, cool. You've just given me some free engagement there. Thanks, bud. But if you replace that with, actually, I'm someone who's maybe a little insecure about how I look, and I've posted a picture of myself, and someone who would just walk past me in the street, or someone who would otherwise not even open their mouth, it suddenly feels emboldened to chime in and say, "Oh, you're this, you're that, you're ugly, you're fat, you're whatever." You know what I mean? And it's like, a lot of the time people wouldn't do that in real life. So I think that the medium itself is a challenge for sure. Mm. What's interesting as well, though, is from talking to a lot of young people, what's funny is that obviously Heads has been going for a decade now. So I'm now in my 30s rather than in my 20s, like when we started. So I'm the old people now. But
horrible when that happens, isn't it?
I know. Oh, dude, I feel... Have you seen that? I think it was in 30 Rock. It's Steve Buscemi and he's got the skateboard and he's like, "How do you do, fellow kids?" That's very much how I feel on a daily basis. But we talk to a lot of young people, and a lot... What's interesting is that a lot of them do report back that actually social media, they view it as a positive thing, particularly as a way for staying in touch and communicating. The dangerous side to that, though, as well, is that then you end up with this kind of FOMO thing and like constantly feeling like you have to be online. And I am such a fan of Do Not Disturb. I think Apple building that into their products was one of the best decisions ever, because I get so stressed out when my phone is pinging off, because my phone's blowing up all the time because I'm so popular.
Inundated.
Yeah. But it's one of those things where, yeah, I get very stressed out by that. And so the ability to turn that off, I almost have the opposite of FOMO. I have JOMO, the joy of missing out.
Yeah, I love it.
Nope, I don't care. I'm offline. Yeah. I actually quite like that. So I think it's a really loaded thing, social media. I think there's a real kind of... It can go one way or the other. Yeah. However, ultimately, like I said, we need to be meeting people where they are. And if where they are is social media, then I'd rather that they're scrolling through and they come across my face being like, "Hey, everything's going to be okay. Here are some things that might help you get through this next patch," or whatever. I'd so much rather them see that than something harmful. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And like I said, I can tell we could definitely do a lot on that, but we'll park that for a moment. But I think that is the gist of it, and I totally agree. But the other thing I wanted to pick up on, which I guess I didn't really notice at the time initially when I kind of first heard about you guys, but now makes total sense, is the age in which you're chatting to people, right? Like young people, kids in school age stuff. Now that's really interesting for me, because when I think back to my days in school, definitely wasn't aware of mental health even as a concept, that it was a thing. And I think if I had, I wasn't having particularly like mental health issues at school, but I think as I did later on in life, a lot of that stuff came from school. And I think if you really want to make change and real impact stuff, it starts with kids, right? It starts in school. So they soak up stuff like a sponge. And if you want to change a generation, start early, because trying to change adults is way harder. So I'm really, like, you know, I'm glad to see that, and it surprises me, but it's awesome. That's where you're going in at.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, man. There's almost two ways to look at it as well. So one, I stole this line from someone on a regional strategic meeting one time, and I've got so much mileage out of this one line, and I can't remember who you were, but thank you so much for this line, is that we don't wait until kids' teeth are falling out to teach kids to brush their teeth. So why do we wait until they're at a crisis point before we actually start introducing healthy coping mechanisms and the concept of resilience. And so, yeah, so whoever gave me that line, gold. The other side to that then, though, is that actually, personally, I think, and it's been mind-blowing that we've had a lot of requests from primary schools for sessions. And the sessions that we have at the moment are more aimed at high school age, so like 11 to 18. But there's a real argument that we should be developing a primary kind of approach as well, so that you're really getting in there really early. And then just introducing those ideas, like you mentioned it, and we maybe had, I probably had a worse experience, but in terms of going through high school and like the conversation around mental health at that time, I think young people now, the conversation has progressed an awful lot and people are a lot more kind of open to this dialogue and the conversation about mental health in general. But something that I always think about is the idea of emotional literacy. I feel like people have probably felt these feelings for probably millennia, but do we have the words to actively describe how we're feeling? And was it the Greeks? They had like 10 different words for love to describe different types of love. That you, maybe you, the love between a husband and wife, and then the love between a, or you love cars or whatever, but it's still the same word love, but they'd have different words for love. I feel like we almost need that, particularly from a very young age, for I'm feeling low. And but what does that actually mean, and digging into what that actually is. Am I allowed to swear on this as well?
Of course you are. Go, yeah.
Funny side note, really, is that actually the word shit is sometimes just the best thing for it. And I'm very mindful that I don't want to be going into school being like, what up, shitheads? You know what I mean?
But it's tempting as it is.
Yeah. But I've thought for a long time, like, there needs to be a better word for, or like a PG version of that word, really. Mm. But ultimately, I think that it needs a little bit of gravitas, and it needs a little bit of like, ooh, to kind of imply the severity of like,
yeah,
how shit it can feel to feel that low. So it's an interesting one where, yeah, like I said, I don't want to be all potty mouthed and stuff, but I think it's a really important thing to actually acknowledge how, if you're using that to describe how you are you using that because it's actually like the most intense way of describing how intensely bad you're feeling in that moment, where saying I feel sad doesn't have, or like this situation is really not great, doesn't have the same kind of weight to it that describing something as shit has. Yeah, I don't know, a semantics point, but
no, I think it's a good one. The way we communicate about this stuff is equally as important as the thing itself. I think you're absolutely spot on. And I guess the certainly from my memory, it's called the stigma of, even if you found the word, I feel shit, I feel depressed, I feel low, that was if you had the balls to say that, which because of the stigma attached at that kind of time when I was in school, you just weren't going to say that out loud. You were going to be avoided in the playground. It was all wrong. But yeah, it was, you know, I think as I've got older and more mature, the acceptance of a negative experience and negative emotion is in itself a positive one. There was no space for that at school when I was younger. And I think what you're doing creates that space. It creates the opportunity and the space for someone to say, you know what, I don't feel okay right now, or this week, or this year. And that is okay. That doesn't make me a bad person. And that's certainly what I came from.
Huge, man. Absolutely huge. Yeah, that's such a good point you've raised there. Yeah. And it's something that I will shout about until I'm blue in the face, is that actually you're more than what's happened to you, and you're more than your mental health, and there's so much more to you as a person, and you have so much more to offer the world and so much more to share and go on to do and achieve than just the crummy situation that you find yourself in right now. And I guess, like, because the other big factor as well is like identity plays such a big role, particularly when you're going through that kind of, a really good example of it is Mean Girls. Look at me talking about a very topical movie reference here in 2023. But you have the kind of the different groups within high school in Mean Girls, and actually everyone wants to belong. Of course we do.
Yeah.
And it's where we like find a sense of belonging and identity from. Like, how many times did it happen in high school where someone was the naughty kid, and oh, the naughty kid is acting up again? And it's, if they're constantly told you're the naughty kid, they're gonna go, okay, I guess I'm naughty, so I guess I'm just gonna keep on being naughty. And it's like, a big thing that we talk about in a lot of the training sessions we do as well, when we're talking about self-harm, for example. If you call someone a self-harmer, it becomes a part of who they are and a part of their identity. Whereas if it's they are someone who self-harms, it's an action that they do, it's easier to separate from it, and it's easier for it to not become something that they are known for and identified by. Because there was a study that was saying that, yeah, if you were a smoker, if you said, I am a smoker, it was way harder to quit than if you said, I smoke.
Because you're not likely to give up anything that threatened your identity, right?
Exactly that. Yeah. So it's a really interesting thing, you know, bringing it back around to semantics and language, actually, I suppose, isn't it? But like the way that we even talk about things, and I suppose talk about other people, can have such a huge impact on their relationship with themselves and their relationship and that kind of journey that they go on in regards to their mental health as well. So, yeah.
How do you find kids in these sessions take this kind of information, or what kind of feedback do they give you? They're quite open. They're a lot more emotionally switched on than I might expect, because I don't engage with this on a daily basis with kids of that kind of age. So I don't really know. But are they quite open to talking about their feelings with their friends, with you, with the teachers?
There's, of course, a few answers to this. I'm going to talk for another 45 minutes now. Strap in. No, there's so it's a bit of a mixed bag, really. And the funniest one is there's been many occasions where, because the workshops that we do are like groups, so it's maybe ideally 8 young people working together. And there's been a number of occasions where we've found one person in the group where we're just not reaching them. Oh my gosh, they're just not engaging with any of the activities. They're not taking part in any of the conversations. We're just, how do we reach these kids? And they're the ones who then the teachers come back to us a couple of weeks later after the sessions are finished and gone, they're a totally different person. They've learned so much. Or they'll get in touch with us and say, man, that session was so helpful. Thank you so much. And we're like, but you were the one who, you were engaging the least. So it can be really hard to gauge it in the moment. I find it really interesting that young people are so open about it, and we'll talk about it. In general, we'll talk about it a lot more. And it takes a while to warm up as well, because a lot of people would feel the same, right? A stranger comes in and is, hey, let's talk about your feelings. And a lot of the time, it's talking about the stuff that you've maybe been a very kind of secretive act, you know what I mean? When we're talking about self-harm, it's a lot of the time, very few people know about it. And I've gone too far the other way now, where I've done this for 10 years. And so I have no qualms with walking into a room full of strangers and being like, hi, here's my deepest, darkest secrets. It can be a really hard thing just even talking about it. So sometimes it takes 3 weeks to actually get anything out of anyone. But I do think that in general, a lot of the people that we work with are a lot more open to having the conversation, able to have the conversation, than I would have assumed so, you know, when we first started. And there's a really nice sense of support that comes from working with a group of people at the same time, right? Like, actually, you only need one person to open the floodgates, as it were. And then everyone's like, oh, it's okay to talk about this. And I see them getting help and advice. And we try to throw things back out to the group as much as we can as well. So like, how would you help this person? You know, what would you suggest? And then it becoming a sense of people looking after themselves and each other as well. So yeah, it's really encouraging sometimes to actually see, and just to think about, man, where would I have been if this had been around for me in high school? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. That's the thing, isn't it? And the progress, it's not only a perfect world, but the progress is key. And I think from what you told me the last half hour, it's come on leaps and bounds, the kind of conversations and the dialogue around it, especially at that age as well. Like, I've only recently, I'd say in the last 5 years, got to a point where I'm comfortable talking about this stuff to, on any degree, to people I'm close with, let alone being, what did you say, 11 to 18, that kind of age category, doing that. That's just mind-blowing to me in a good way. That, to me, is a very clear positive change, positive impact that you've been a part of, which is amazing. And I suppose on that, and looking forward, what do you think about in kind of 5-10 years time as to what might success look like for Heads Above the Wave? What might you be able to point to and say, you know what, that's a good identifier of success for us? Or is it just continuous progress
I think ultimately it's reaching more people, because we know that what we're doing has the power to help people, right? We've done workshops for 8 years. We've been sharing stories and experiences and coping strategies for 10. Like, really what we need to do, and what I think, yeah, progress and success looks like is actually, well, for one, finding a really good tangible way of actually measuring it, because that forms with the students that we work with is great, but actually like a more broad scale. Do you feel better for having interacted with Heads Above the Waves? However we do that, that we can quantifiably look at and say, we've helped this many people. A big kind of stat that drove wanting to do this in the first place was that they were looking at 100,000 hospital admissions as a result of self-harm. And I think if we can get to a point where that is ultimately zero, that's a real success for us. That's obviously a much, much bigger task. If we're going in and saying, like we mentioned, from a young age, here are healthy coping mechanisms, here are places you can talk and ways you can get support and things you can do to look after yourself, we're going to be chipping away at that big number, I think. So that's a really big one. And then I guess just, like I said, yeah, on a maybe more kind of commercial level, reaching more people. Like, I would love for us to have branches in Cardiff, Bristol, Manchester, London, like all around the place, and actually having, I want to redefine what a community center is.
Because, wow, that would be great. Wow, yeah.
And I, again, I'm lumping you in with me here. Sorry, Sam, you're lumped into the early 30s category here. But like, when I say a community center, I've got this very particular idea, like a very particular kind of musky smell and like off-brand Winnie the Pooh painting that for legal reasons definitely isn't Winnie the Pooh on the wall of kind of a peeling away paint in this musky kind of community center. Whereas
the word bleak comes to mind.
Forgotten even as well, you know? And I think something that we've spoken about a few times before now is the need for a third space. So you've got your home and you've got work or school or college or wherever, university. You need like a third space where you can decompress from both of them so that your life isn't just home or work. And it's historically we had maybe more like churches or even like pubs and stuff, but a lot of pubs are closing down. A lot of people aren't going to church anymore. And so what we need is like a third space where you can come and just exist and just be and just feel welcome and supported and safe. And so what I would love to do is to transform Heads to be able to offer this third space, basically. So yeah, you could come and have a coffee, have a nice milkshake or something, and then have space where you can have like drop-in counseling sessions, we can deliver our workshops out of, that sort of thing, as well as buying merch from us as well. Please buy some merch. And yeah, just having that kind of third space, which ultimately then builds a sense of community center, which ultimately is a protective factor for mental health as a broader picture.
Yeah. What about slightly outside of Heads Above the Waves, or perhaps not, but what about you personally going forward? Where are you heading? Have you got other projects in the pipeline, or are you really focusing on this right now?
I have had a very funny year. I was working, so basically for pretty much as long as Heads has been going, I've been working other jobs to make ends meet. And then in February of this year, I sacked that off to go and do Heads full time, to kind of, you know, really throw my hat at it.
Amazing.
And then like a week after I lost that stable income, we found out my wife was pregnant. So I was like, cool.
Well, congrats.
Thank you, man. So please buy a t-shirt, please buy some merch. So that's been really funny. But then also, again, what's really funny is that like doing what we do, the only real interaction I've had with children and young people for most of the last 10 years has been with people who are in like a real bad mental health space. And it's been a real kind of trip for me to be kind of like, oh my gosh, is it really easy to to impact this child? And is it going to be so? And then you have to remember that there's actually a lot of people who don't end up in a really bad space, who struggle from time to time, and everybody is going to, and everybody's going to feel low at some point, and that is okay. So it's been a really interesting thing for me to be like, what changes can I try and make that will lead to my, we're going to have a boy, lead to my son not feeling the same way that I felt, basically. So that's been really funny. And then we also, the even funnier thing is as well, is I also play in a couple of bands. I play in a punk rock band called Junior, which is very hard to find on Spotify. And if you type in Junior, it comes up with every country artist ever before it comes up with Junior. And then I play drums for an artist called Novo Amor as well. And with Novo Amor, we're doing quite a lot of touring around the world, including we're going to China at the end of this year, and then Australia and like kind of Singapore and stuff. And we fly home from Singapore on the due date of the baby. So my year has been an absolute roller coaster and is going to be even more of a roller coaster in the next couple of months. So yeah, for me personally, we're just getting through it one day at a time, baby.
Amazing. Yeah. Well, look, we could do another 6 hours on parenting, and I've only been a parent for 11 months. So we could easily do that. I could probably also do another 6 hour podcast on my love of Novo Amor and Ali and the guys.
Yeah.
We won't get too much into that, but that's, you know, that's amazing stuff. And you're so right. I was in exactly the same position, expecting our boy. I was like, bringing this person into the world, and at some point it's going to be the age that I am now, and I was at, and he's going to be at school, and all these things I went through. Like, that's going to be, I'm bringing someone into the world to go through that same stuff. How do I prepare him for that? And it was really alarming. And I thought, I'm never going to get it right, because you can't. There's no such thing. But I am way better prepared than I think than my dad was and his dad and such. And I think that's the best you can cope for, right? And you just kind of pass on the kind of good messages, and you make mistakes along the way. And I absolutely will, and have done already. But it's incremental, little atomic bits of progress, isn't it? And I think that's it. And you'll be absolutely fine. You'll be absolutely fine.
I've already got so many dad jokes. I practiced barbecuing yesterday. What more do you need? I got the skills I need, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, like, you're definitely on a really nice kind of front in terms of doing something that makes kids proud, right? That was actually something for me in recent years when I changed the way our business works and stuff. I was thinking about that. Okay, I've got a kid. What's he going to look up to? And I thought I could do better. So I made some big changes there. But I think with what you're doing, you're on a great path for that, to bring a kid into that and to learn from you. I think it's an amazing thing. So you'll do a brilliant job. And that is the last bit of advice I'll give you on parenting, because just put your fingers in your ears after that point. You're going to get so much advice, and none of it will apply to you. You'll just work it out as you go. Just as we sort of start to wrap this up, I just wondered if it might be helpful for our listeners if you could kind of give just some quick, practical, actionable advice for those that are struggling or know others that are, if there's any kind of really nice key takeaways that you use in your sessions.
One I alluded to earlier, really, actually, but is to give how you're feeling a name, and to like try and identify where it is within your body as well. And that kind of simple process, It's such a basic like 101 thing of, I am feeling this right now, and that feels like I've got butterflies in my stomach or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it's a really good first step to actually understanding how you're feeling. And then following on from that then is actually trying to understand your needs. So thinking about, what do I need right now? I'm feeling lonely. So what do I need? I need to actually interact with someone, or I actually just need, why am I feeling lonely? Is because, oh, no one's actually reached out to me. So what can I do about that? I can reach out to them. Those are two like really important first steps that then lead on to find what works for you and find what works in different situations. So what helps you when you're feeling, let's say, lonely, won't necessarily help if you're feeling angry, right? So it's about having kind of a few different coping strategies, again, that can help you through different emotions and different situations and different feelings. My advice there is to go on the Heads Above the Waves website, hatw.co.uk, plug, plug, plug.
In the show notes.
yeah. And there's a section on there which says, here's some things to try. And you choose from a drop down menu, like, I'm feeling. And then, like, it shows things that might help based on how you're feeling. So, again, if you've done those steps of giving your feelings a name, understanding your needs, and then find the stuff that's going to work for you and in that situation. Other really quick practical thing as well is to, for me, I find it so helpful to just brain dump, to just write everything down, whether that is just listing out everything that's making you feel rubbish in that moment, and then going through and highlighting it in red or green, whether it's something you can, if green, if it's something you can do something about, and red, if it's something that there's just nothing you can do about, you just can't change. And that's a really useful exercise for me. Speaking of exercise, exercise is actually really great. I didn't want to hear that myself. I was the worst person at sports ever, but genuinely, like, finding a form of exercise that is right for you has so many benefits, like health-wise, mental health-wise. It's just a no-brainer. But a lot of people don't want to do it because we don't have the right sort of exercise that makes us want to keep doing it. So find some sort of movement that works and is right for you. Yeah. And then two final pieces of maybe more trivial advice as well, actually. One is to get a really good lamp. I've got this, it's a brand called Lumi. There's other ones out there, but I've got a Lumi lamp that simulates sunrise and sunset. So you set so rather than just being led in bed on your phone with the lights on or turning the lights off and just blue light coming from your phone, you set this lamp and it's like bright, and then across the space of about half an hour it gradually gets more and more dim to like simulate sunrise, sunset, and that helps your body get into more of a natural sleep rhythm. And then it does the same in reverse for waking up as well. It gradually gets brighter. So rather than an alarm just going, it like helps you wake up more naturally. Mm-hmm. And that is going to help with your sleep, which is going to help with everything else. So yeah, get a sick lamp. Trivial tip number one. Final trivial tip number two is get some God tier socks and pants. And this is the silliest piece of advice I will ever give you, but I would put money on the fact that most people have got one pair of underwear that makes them feel like $1 million. Whether it's that like expensive pair that you splashed out on, or whether it's like a really nice pair that you got for Christmas or something like that, I've got a handful of God tier socks and pants that you only wear for really special occasions. And I keep a pair of them. And particularly when I'm on tour as well, I'll always take a pair of God tier socks and pants. If there's ever a day where you're not feeling 100%, if you're not feeling, the way my wife describes it is, if you're not feeling very sparkly today, if you just feel a bit low, wearing something like that, it's great because you get the benefit of dressing up and putting on something nice, but it is just for you and nobody else needs to know about it. And you don't need to tell anybody else about it, but you can be walking around knowing that you've done one small thing to just purely for you, as a little treat for you. Yeah, God tier socks and pants, trivial tip.
That's amazing. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that, man. That's awesome stuff. The last thing that we like to do on this show is we like to give you an opportunity to give a shout out to someone that you think's doing really great work and doing good things to make a positive impact in the world. That can be someone that you know personally, a friend, famous, not famous, a business, an organization, whoever you think is worthy of a couple of minutes of shining some light on. Who is your shout out and why?
This is a really good question, and it really made me scratch my head for a while, and then I think I came to a very obvious answer. My shout out is Simon Sinek. I don't know if you've come across him.
Yeah.
Went viral a few years ago for talking about millennials and what do millennials want in the workplace. Yeah. This. But I've had some really profound time in the bath listening to Simon Sinek podcasts. But part of the reason why I think he's the man is because he talks about finding your why. And if you want to look at it in like maybe a cynical kind of businessy context, that's really helpful for telling stories and therefore selling products. But also just in general, like, it made me really reflect on what is my why, what is my purpose. And for me, and I've touched on it throughout this podcast, but for me, my huge big motivator is that I don't want anybody to feel as rubbish as I've felt in the past. And realizing that is my why, as Simon Sinek would put it, and that's my kind of my purpose, it makes everything else that I do make so much sense. But it can also mean, it can just help you understand. For example, I'm really bad at giving hard feedback if someone's done something that needs some coaching or correcting. I'm really bad at that because I don't want to make them feel bad and feel rubbish like I've felt in the past if I tell them they've done something wrong. But understanding that and understanding that's where I'm coming from means that I'm able to then build into that feedback, hey, I'm not mad at you. I understand. I would probably be crumbling if I got this feedback right now. So just to set the scene, it is totally okay. Here's why I'm sharing this information with you or whatever. So yeah, I've had a lot of like introspective moments and a lot of big thoughts thanks to Simon Sinek. So yeah, Simon Sinek is my special shout out. I've taken a lot from him and I will probably continue to take a lot from him. But yeah.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, dude. That's been honestly so eye-opening and refreshing and just really quite heartwarming for me, actually, to hear what you're doing. Certainly in school, I think that's such a key thing, and any real change, I think, across any industry issue, anything like that, I think can be so powerful when taught at school. So really admire the work that you're doing. Thank you so much for your time today, and good luck with parenting, ultimately. That's the biggest thing. Good luck with that's going to take over your life. But dude, thank you so much, and look after yourself.
Thank you. Absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
There we go. What a guy. Si Martin from Heads Above the Waves. I really love his positivity and his charm to speak about these delicate subjects with care and a bit of tasteful humour. But I'm keen to hear more about your thoughts on any mental health concerns. Perhaps there's other people or services that you think are worth mentioning. Your feedback's going to be directly impacting the way that we find guests for future episodes. So if you've got anyone in mind, you can email me on cpi@soundquake.co.uk. CPI for creating a positive impact. Today's shout out from Si was Simon Sinek, who may be familiar to many of you. He's quite big these days. But if not, there is a link to his site in the show notes. And if you're able to support Heads Above the Waves in any way, then head to their site and their socials. Again, they're in the show notes. Check out what they've got available. Their merch is actually class. So, I mean, you know, fashion's not really my strong point. So maybe take that with a pinch of salt. A personal shout out from me today is to Griff at Storm and Shelter. They're a video production company based in Cardiff. He was the one that actually connected me to Si in the first place. And if you're a business and you ever need a video production company, then they don't really come much better than those guys. So check those out as well. Thank you so much. We'll be back next week. And remember, in the words of Ted Lasso, be curious, not judgmental.